We're live and we're local. This is a Juno afternoon on Monday, October 16th, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, filling in for Scott Burton today. On the show, we'll hear about Glory Hole and Thanksgiving. Alan Akijema and Charlene Miller will be here to highlight the Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast Fundraiser. We'll talk with Dr. Julia Parrish about COSE training. And Steve Kosis will be here with a preview of Wednesday's Planetarium presentation, 100 Years of General Relativity. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. And looking at the weather today, widespread rain showers, highs in the mid-40s. Tonight, numerous rain showers, lows around 40. Tomorrow, more widespread rain showers. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Hannah Colton in for Antonia Gonzalez. Cleanup is beginning for some Northern California tribal members who faced massive wildfires in recent days. Deborah Kroll is a journalist based in Phoenix. Reporting for High Country News, she contacted three tribes, including one member of the Elam Indian Colony who helped evacuate the 13 homes of his community.
What he had reported to me was that as they were driving out, the fire was on both sides of the road and they could feel the heat. They put their three youngest kids down on the floor of the van and threw a blanket over them to keep them from being scared.
Kroll says a few people returned by boat the next day and helped firefighters save all the structures in the Elam colony. In Mendocino County, she says the Sherwood Valley Rancheria lost six homes. Kroll says media needs to keep paying attention in the coming days as the years-long recovery process gets underway.
A lot of times you see the majority of the coverage are the winery owners and people in affluent neighborhoods, and they forget that in these areas, there's also a lot of winery workers who don't make a lot of money. And, of course, we have a lot of tribal members who are in similar situations, and some of them are not able to put casinos up because they're too remote. So they have to find other ways of obtaining help to recover from all of this.
The United Pomo Nations Council is seeking donations to provide aid to tribal members affected by fires either on or off trust lands. The St. Regis Mohawk tribe is defending its patent deal with Allergan against challenges from Congress. The pharmaceutical company last month announced a deal with the tribe to transfer patents on the drug Restasis to protect it from patent disputes. Lawmakers in both the U.S. House and Senate have called for investigations, citing concerns that the unconventional move could discourage the production of generic drugs. Then last week, Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri drafted a bill to prohibit tribes' sovereign immunity from being used to block patent reviews. The St. Regis Mohawk tribe, in a statement Friday, responded to the criticism, saying that ongoing payments from the deal will help make up for budget shortfalls and provide for adequate housing and health care on the reservation. It pointed to the thousands of patents owned by states and public universities in the U.S. and said tribes maintain the same authority to partner with companies. Allergan has until October 17th to submit materials to a House Oversight Committee. A longtime Native health leader in Montana is calling the launch of a new effort to combat suicide historic. Montana Public Radio's Eric Whitney reports.
About 75 Montana tribal health leaders and people who work with them met at the state capitol recently to start work on a multi-year suicide prevention initiative. It's being funded through $1 million that Montana Governor Steve Bullock set aside in this year's budget to address the problem. Anna Whiting Sorrell with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribes Health Department is calling it historic in its scope because it's bringing together people from not just the state's seven reservations, but the state health department and Indian Health Service as well.
When you bring in urban programs and have all of the five urban programs in a room too, that really makes it historic. And that you have state employees and IHS employees. I've been doing healthcare since the early 80s, and I don't remember a time when that has happened.
Because all of the tribes and urban Indian health centers serve different populations, Whiting Sorrell says they'll need to tailor suicide prevention efforts to their individual communities. The meeting is to help them do that, while at the same time addressing common challenges and looking for ways to assist one another. The latest federal data shows that American Indians and Alaska Natives have the highest suicide rate of any ethnic group in America, followed closely by whites. For National Native News, I'm Eric Whitney in Missoula, Montana.
And I'm Hannah Colton.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Support by AARP. What we do might surprise you, like sponsoring the Alaska Federation of Natives in Anchorage, Alaska, October 19th through the 21st. Information at AARP.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. And my first guest today is Maria Lovashuk, Executive Director of the Glory Hole Shelter and Soup Kitchen, here to talk about what's happening for Thanksgiving and much more. Welcome to the show, Maria.
Thanks very much for having me.
Sure. You're the executive director, but could you tell us a little bit more about what's your role at the shelter?
Yeah, so I oversee all of the shelter operations and all of our soup kitchen operations and all of our care center operations. And I'm also coordinating with our partners our new Housing First project.
Wow, you must be very busy then.
It's a little busy.
And for those who don't know, what services does the Glory Hole provide to the community?
So the Glory Hole does breakfast, lunch, and dinner every day. And then we have emergency shelter for people who are over 18. And then we also provide housing assistance. We have a garden program. And we basically just try to help people on an individual basis with what they need.
And it's located downtown. It's a neighborhood fixture. How long has it been an establishment?
So the Glory Hole was established in 82, and then the Glory Hole building that the Glory Hole is in now was built in 94.
Wow.
It was occupied in 94.
And about how many people does it serve daily?
So we have 40 beds, and right now we have 41 people sheltering with us, which really... like a high amount for this time a year. Usually in the winter we're over, but I don't think we're really in what we consider to be winter yet. And then we serve about 100 people per day in breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
You mentioned that you're also a part of Housing First. How is that connected to the Glory Hole?
So the Glory Hole, some years ago, together with many community organizations, including the city, the Central Council of Clinkin and Haida Tribe, the Regional Housing Authority, JEMI, St. Vincent de Paul, where lots of other entities decided that we have a gap in this community in terms of permanent supportive housing mm-hmm. for chronically homeless adults. And so the Glory Hole stepped up and coordinated the project with a lot of other partners. And so now we're providing support staff on site for the
Great.
Project.
And Housing First is now open. The stores are open. And how many people is it serving?
So it has 32 apartments, and we're now three quarters full.
Wow. Do you expect it to be at capacity?
Oh, yeah. And the reason why it's not at capacity is because we wanted to move people in waves.
Ah.
And so our last wave is slated to move in at the end of the month.
Wow. Big jobs. Well, thanks for doing what you do. You're here to talk today about the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. What would you like our listeners to know about?
So I wanted people who would like to get a turkey box to know that now is the time to sign up. And people can sign up by calling the Glory Hole at 586-4159 and sign up for their box. And this year it's a little bit different because the wonderful, amazing Holy Trinity Church is willing to store the turkey box items for us and also distribute out of Holy Trinity Church. And not out of the Glory Hole.
Okay.
Because it's just so much better. It's a lot less overwhelming, and we're just really grateful to the church for helping us with that. But, yeah, still sign up at the Glory Hole. And we also wanted people to know that if people want to start dropping off items for the Thanksgiving boxes, we can start doing so at the Glory Hole. And the list of items that we need is on our website, which was not working last week, but it's working now. I checked this morning. And the list of items is on there.
Okay. And what is the website?
It's www.feedjuno.org.
Okay, great. Let's take a step back for a second because I wanted to know, what is a turkey box?
Okay, so a turkey box contains most of the things that a person would need, a family would need to have a Thanksgiving meal. So it has a turkey, it has some veggies. It has stuffing. It has rolls. It has gravy. It has butter. And so right now we don't want any fresh items. We just want the frozen items or the shelf-stable items. Like we want turkeys that are frozen. We want canned corn, canned beans, frozen rolls, things like that.
I see.
Stuffing.
Great. So we can help by purchasing some of those items and dropping them off.
Or donating to the glory hole, and then we can purchase the items, whatever is easiest. And maybe if people do start dropping off the items, if I could just please specify what their items are for Thanksgiving boxes.
Okay.
And we just go to the kitchen.
That's great.
At 247 South Franklin Street.
Well, all that sounds pretty easy. What else do you guys need for Thanksgiving?
So we always need money. This is our busiest fundraising time of the year. So we're looking for donations, which could also be made online. And then this time of the year, we really, it gets getting colder outside. So we're really looking for things like gloves, non-cotton socks, could be used socks, rain gear, hats, and long thermal underwear.
Mm-hmm. Do you expect some people to spend most of the winter outside?
I think the number will be greatly reduced this year. Will be reduced by 32 people because of That's housing good. First. But I think we will still see unsheltered individuals outside.
Great.
And so if folks have things like camping gear, we would distribute those as well.
I mean, not great, but yeah, that's it's great that the number is reduced. But I am curious about what the need still is and what people who are listening can do to help. It sounds like we can make donations for turkey boxes, bring in warm clothing items, and just make direct donations to the glory hole. Is there anything else?
I think just maybe so every year, you know, the Thanksgiving donations, they come like a little late. Like, I mean, we don't come late. They come just in time. But it's a little bit hard sometimes to plan. And so if folks wanted to just maybe get on it a little early in terms of donating turkeys and non-perishable items, that would be really wonderful.
It would help you out a lot as a coordinator. Yeah, well, people still have more than a month to go, so it's good that you're here early and talking about it.
Oh, and another really great thing is that we are partnering with the Ski Swap again.
Oh, really?
This year, and maybe I'm jumping the gun announcing this a little bit, but I'm pretty positive that folks can also bring their items to the Ski Swap.
Okay.
And in exchange for the turkey box items we bring, we will get some very delicious coffee, which is very nice when you're standing in line and it's cold.
Absolutely. Great. Okay. So go over that again. I'm speaking with Maria Lovishuk, Executive Director at the Glory Hole Shelter and Soup Kitchen. Thanksgiving is coming. She has turkey boxes that are being put together, and you can donate items for the turkey boxes at the Glory Hole, but they will be distributed at the church. Holy Trinity Church. So that's different this year. And they're also accepting warm clothing item donations and cash donations. And you can go online at www.feedjuno.org.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I got it all right. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add today, Maria?
No, just thank you so much for having us.
Of course. Of course. Well, for those who are listening, get your donations in early.
And sign up for turkey boxes now.
And sign up for turkey boxes now.
The cutoff will be November 12th.
Great. Well, thanks again for being here, Maria.
Thank you so much.
If I had the world to give, I'd give it to you long as you live. Would you let it fall or hold it all in your arms? If I had a song to sing, I'd sing it to you as long as you live. Lullaby, or maybe a plain serenade. Wouldn't you laugh, dance, and cry, or be afraid at the change you made?
I had a star to give. I'd give it to you long as you live. Would you have the time to watch it shine, watch it shine? Or ask for the moon and heaven too. I'd give them to you.
This is Troy Quinn, music director of the Juno Symphony. Join me on Saturday, October 21st and Sunday, October 22nd at the JDHS as we open our season with a monumental concert of timeless classics. Sibelius' Brooding Finlandia opens the concert as young superstar violinist Fabiola Kim joins the orchestra to play Vaughan Williams' Serene, The Lark Ascending. Brahms' Third Symphony promises to tug on your heartstrings as the program comes to a close. Tickets are at Hearthside, The Jack, JunoSymphony.org, and at the door. Come experience the Juno Symphony. Adventure awaits.
Support comes from Planned Parenthood, working to provide personalized and compassionate care. From annual exams to birth control options, STD testing to cancer screenings, Planned Parenthood provides reproductive health care with or without insurance. Located next to Twin Lakes at the corner of Egan and Glacier. Appointments online at PlannedParenthood.org.
It is 17 minutes after the hour. I'm Shelley Delaney. You're tuned into a Juno Afternoon, and my next guests are Alan Akiyama and Charlene Miller, here to talk about pancakes. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Shelley.
Yeah, thank you, Sally.
Now, are pancakes your favorite breakfast food?
They're one of my favorites, definitely.
Do you like them plain or with blueberries or chocolate chips?
I'm a blueberry pancake aficionado, but if it's a pancake breakfast, we're going to have a choice of either plain, strawberry, blueberry, or even banana.
Wow. Oh, sorry, at this time of day, I'm very distracted by talk of food, but you're really here to talk about the Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast, which is a fundraiser. And how are you involved? What are your roles in this event?
Well, I'm on the Juno Senior Center Advisory Council. So our main function is fundraisers like these. We do the pancake breakfast twice a year on Seward's Day and Alaska Day. And all the proceeds go to benefit the Juno Senior Nutritions Program and Meals on Wheels Program under Catholic Community Services.
And I'm the Meals on Wheels coordinator, so my job is to make sure that all of our seniors are getting their lunch for the day and make sure I've got a driver for everybody.
Now, is this an annual event, the pancake breakfast?
Yes. The pancake breakfast is an annual event, and this year it's on Wednesday, the 18th, so just 2 days away, and it's going to be from 9 a.m. to 11:30 p.m., AM at the Juno Senior Center.
Yeah,
at 12th and Egan Drive. Tickets are $13 in advance or $15 at the door for adults, $7 for children, 7 to 12 and 6 and under are free.
And I'm also looking for volunteers. Normally a volunteer gives about an hour a week at most, but I do take subs who I call up to see if they can volunteer and if they can say yes or no. And if they can, I'll just move on. But if anybody calls me to volunteer, the first people to call will win 2 tickets to go to this pancake breakfast.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So if they give me a call, if they're interested, at 463-6179. Again, that's 463-6179.
All cell phones are turned off and on silent at this moment. Is that true?
That's true.
Okay,
so call her as soon as we're off the air.
As soon as she's off
the
air, give her a call. The office number. Okay, great. I was just joking anyway, but that's great. So 2 free tickets to the pancake breakfast if you call and offer up an hour of your time or so to volunteer?
Not even that much. It'd be less than an hour a week.
Yep. What does volunteering entail?
It entails coming in and picking up a group of meals and delivering them in town. So we've got different routes around town. It's usually 5 to possibly 12 meals, but it generally doesn't take more than an hour to drop them off at different homes to people.
And so this pancake breakfast is a fundraiser, and it benefits both Meals on Wheels and the Senior Nutritions Program. What is the Senior Nutritions Program? What sort of services does that provide?
Well, under the Senior Nutritions Program, we provide a healthy, nutritious noonday meal at the Juno Senior Center 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Usually you start serving about 12:15, meals down by 12:30. We also serve the same meal Tuesdays and Thursdays at our Douglas Satellite Center, which is a Douglas United Methodist Church.
And are these meals, these lunches, are they open to all, or is it mostly seniors?
They're open to anyone, and it's we ask that people 60 and under pay $10, and 60 and older pay $5. Again, all the money that we take in at their fundraisers and at our noonday meals goes towards supporting the Senior Nutritionist Program and Meals on Wheels.
That's great. Do you have a lot of folks subscribed to Meals on Wheels or to these programs?
We do. Yeah, we
so
generally just.
There's a lot of people dependent on them.
A lot of people do, yeah.
We serve
probably 120 meals every day.
Oh, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. Well, thank you for doing what you do. Okay, so let's go over the details of the event one more time. It will be held at the Juno Senior Center. That's at 12th and Egan, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. on this coming Wednesday, Alaska Day. Is it always held on Alaska Day?
Yes, on every Sewers Day and every Alaska Day. So we serve a big pancake breakfast, eggs, bacon. We have tea, coffee, and juice drink. And we're also going to have, by popular request, we're going to bring back Dale Wygant and his Oompa Band to provide some entertainment during the breakfast. So come on down, bring your friends and neighbors, and enjoy a good start to your Alaska Day festivities.
That sounds great. Well, thank you both for being here today. And is there anything else you'd like to add?
Just come on down and enjoy breakfast with us. And if you're not able to come on Wednesday, look for us to put on again next Sewards Day in March of next year.
Great.
And give me a call at 463-6179 and enter to win a couple of tickets to come to the breakfast and help out some seniors.
Cool. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you very much, Shelley.
Dear writers, we're now accepting short stories and creative nonfiction for our November 16th episode of Writer Showcase. Your work should be between 5 and 15 minutes long when read aloud and can be on the theme of your choice. Go to 360north.org to watch past episodes and for more information. Submissions and questions should be sent to arts@ktoo.org by midnight on October 22nd.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 16th of October, 2017. It's the birthday of the playwright Eugene O'Neill, born in a hotel room on Broadway, New York City, 1888. His father, famous actor, always on the road. Eugene O'Neill was 24 years old when he started to read classic playwrights and decided to do that. Ibsen, Strindberg impressed him. Fell in with a group of theater people in Provincetown, Massachusetts, called the Provincetown Players, which produced O'Neill's plays on a regular basis. 1920, his play Beyond the Horizon became a popular success on Broadway, followed by Anna Christie, Strange Interlude, and Long Day's Journey into Night. After Shakespeare and George Bernard Shaw, Eugene O'Neill, the most widely presented and translated dramatist in the English-speaking world. His were the first real tragedies of the American stage, the first to dispense with formal language in favor of slang. Eugene O'Neill, who said, "Life is for each man a solitary cell whose walls are mirrors." It's the birthday of the playwright who said the only way to get rid of a temptation is to yield to it, Oscar Wilde, born in Dublin, 1854, author of the plays Lady Windermere's Fan, A Woman of No Importance, and The Importance of Being Earnest. Oscar Wilde, who went off to England after college, became part of the High Society of London and a movement in art and literature called aestheticism, art for art's sake. Came to the United States on a lecture tour, stopped everywhere from Des Moines to Denver, from St. Paul to Houston, visited Walt Whitman in Pennsylvania, lectured to rich people, also to coal miners and cowboys. went back to London and wrote his first and only novel, The Picture of Dorian Gray, about a beautiful young man who remains young while a portrait of him grows older and older. Here's a poem for today by Crystal Spring Gibbons, Because the Night You Asked, for Josh. Because the night you asked me, the moon shined like a quarter in the sky, because the leaves were the color of wine at our feet, because like you, there was a private sense of absence in my every day, because in your arms my heart grows plump as a finch, because we both pause at the sight of heavy branches burdened with fruit, the sound of apples dropping to the ground, because you hold no secrets, because I knew what I wanted, because we both love the snow, the ice, the feeling of a long, deadening freeze and the mercy of a thaw, because you gave me an empty beach on a warm day in fall and a feeling that we might stay for a while, just the two of us looking out across the water, I said yes. Because the Night You Asked, a poem by Crystal Spring Gibbons, from her collection Now Here, published by Holy Cow Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, and German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel, BABBEL.com. And by Home Advisor, matching homeowners with background-checked professionals for home projects from minor repairs to major remodels. See homeowner reviews, compare prices, and book appointments at HomeAdvisor.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, October 16th, 2017.
Well, can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. And we could pretend it all the time. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. But just maybe, like a ukulele, mama made a baby. Really don't mind the practice, cause you're my little lady. Lady, lady, love me, cause I love to lay you lazy. We could close the curtains, pretend like there's no world outside. Then we could pretend it all the time, Lord. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need. Can't you see, can't you see? Rain all day and I don't mind. But the telephone singing, ringing, it's too early, don't pick it up. We don't need to, we got everything we need right here, and everything we need is enough. Just so easy when the whole world fits inside of your arms. Attention to the alarm. Wake up slow. Wake up slow. But baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you this.
Song is meant to keep you from doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the weekend now. And we could pretend it all the time. And can't you see that it's just raining? There ain't no need to go outside. Ain't no need, ain't no need. Rain all day and I really, really, really don't mind. Can't you see, can't you see? We gotta wake up slow.
You're tuned into a Juno afternoon on Monday, October 16, 2017. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Looking at the weather forecast, it's raining outside, no need to go outside. Widespread rain showers, highs in the mid-40s, and tonight, numerous rain showers, lows around 40. Tomorrow, more widespread rain showers, highs in the 40s, winds getting up to 15 miles per hour. And Tuesday night, you guessed it, more rain showers, lows in the mid-30s. Wednesday, we might get a little break, but I don't want to make any promises. Our last guests were Alan Akiyama and Charlene Miller. They were here to talk about the Alaska Day Pancake Breakfast, which benefits Meals on Wheels and the Senior Nutritious Program. That's going to be Wednesday morning at 9 a.m., 9 to 11:30 a.m. at the Juno Senior Center at 12th and Egan. Tickets are $13, $15 at the door, and that benefits Meals on Wheels and the Senior Nutritious Program. And speaking of feeding people, the guest before that was Maria Lovashuk, Executive Director of the Glory Hole, talking about Thanksgiving. You can go online to feedjuno.org and find out about the turkey boxes, sign up to donate for Turkey Box, and get a lot more information there. Find out about what else they need. And right, we'll be right back with our next guest in just a moment. You're tuned into a Juno afternoon. You're listening to a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney, and Steve Kosis is my next guest. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Did I pronounce your name right?
Yes, you did.
Great. Steve, you're here to talk about an upcoming presentation at the Marie Drake Planetarium. But before we get to that, I wanted to get your thoughts about the news this morning. Astronomers witnessed two stars colliding, and it had all kinds of implications for science. Were you excited to hear about it?
Yes, I was, because this was the collision of two neutron stars, and we now have three gravity wave detectors on the Earth, and the collision of the two neutron stars was detected. And this is a prediction of Einstein's general theory of relativity, which is the talk we're going to give Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the planetarium.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. But first, just back to the star collision. What do you think it means going forward, all that data from the Swan event?
Well, the data is measured in terabytes, but this is a whole new area of astronomy detecting gravity waves. We had optical astronomy with mirror telescopes. We had radio astronomy. We have infrared astronomy. And now this is gravity wave astronomy. So it's a new branch of astronomy. So if you're going into graduate school in astronomy, this would be an area to write your thesis in.
Great. Lucrative field?
I don't think astronomy pays that well, but if you're interested in expanding your mind, it's an area to go into.
The presentation this Wednesday is about general relativity in the past 100 years. How do the principles of the theory apply to the study of cosmic phenomena?
Well, it's direct. There's two large scientific theories, the theory of the very, very small, which is called quantum mechanics, and the theory of the very large, a large-scale structure of the universe, which is general relativity. The mathematical structures for quantum mechanics and general relativity don't interact. The grand unified theory would be combining the two, and that's a great mystery. You can win a Nobel Prize if you can combine quantum mechanics and general relativity.
The answers we're all waiting for, huh?
True.
What other ideas and information will be shared at the presentation?
Well, we're going to do a visual presentation of general relativity. It was published by Einstein in 1915, and it's passed every verification that's been thrown at it. So, in fact, general relativity is what is cosmology, the study of the birth, origin, future, and large-scale structure of the universe. And cosmology has gone through a long evolution. We had Ptolemy with the geocentric system, Copernicus with the heliocentric system, Kepler's three laws of motion, Newton's law of gravity, and now we have Einstein, which has supplanted them all. And it's been general relativity has been around 102 years, so Newton's laws of gravity lasted for about 300 years, so maybe we'll have another Einstein coming along. Of course, it won't be called Einstein to supplant Einstein's theories.
Oh, that's all super fascinating. It sounds like it's going to be a great talk. Will we get to see the projector in action?
Oh, yes. After we finish the presentation on general relativity, we'll use the Spitz A3 projector to show the night sky tonight, which, as we know in Juno, we usually don't see the night sky. So it's a replacement for it.
Well, when we do get to see it, we appreciate it all that much more, right?
True. And we're starting a fundraising campaign. Our Spitz projector is 50 years old. So even though it still works, it's an analog mechanical optical machine. And we're looking at purchasing a digital machine to replace it. So we're starting a fund project for that, for the replacement.
Cool. Well, you'll have to come back and tell us more about that, especially when you get the details of the fundraiser organized.
Well, that's what we're doing right now is getting the fundraising. We set up a PayPal account, and we're writing up some articles for it.
Well, I'm sure you'll have lots of takers. So let's go over the details of the presentation one more time. It's at Marie Drake Planetarium. It's Wednesday. What else?
7 p.m. Is free, and we make it accessible to all ages. And we always end, as we just said, showing the night sky tonight. So we'll start with the presentation on general relativity and then use the Spitz projector for the night sky tonight.
Great. And it's the presentation is free?
It's free. We have a nonprofit, Friends of Marie Drake Planetarium, and our mission statement is to have free astronomy shows for astronomy education for the public.
Fantastic. And Marie Drake Planetarium is located in downtown
1415
area.
Glacier Avenue, right behind that artificial turf field at the Marie Drake building.
Great. Is there anything else coming up that you'd like to mention while you're here?
Well, we plan to do shows next month. We have a group of volunteers, so we'll have another show next month in December. And five of us from Juno were in Oregon for the total solar eclipse. So we did a number of presentations on the eclipse.
And were you one of those individuals?
Yes, I was. That was my eighth total solar eclipse I've witnessed. So I've been under the moon's shadow about 32 minutes now.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Well, I've met people who've been to at least 40 total solar eclipses. So,
oh my goodness. How many minutes of moon shadow is that?
It varies. The longest that a totality can last is about 7 minutes, and there can be some that are just 2 seconds. So it's quite variable.
Oh, interesting.
Depends on the distance between the Sun, Moon, Earth system. It depends on the distance of the Moon from the Earth for how long the totality is going to last.
And do you plan on attending the next one?
July 2nd, 2019, Northern Chile, Atacama Desert.
Yeah, I think that would be a good place to be.
Yeah, and then 2024 will be the next totality over continental U.S.
Oh, that's kind of a long time to wait.
Well, yeah, it'll go quick.
That's true. The years do fly by. Well, thanks again, Steve, for being here with me today. And did you say everything you wanted to say?
Let me just say that general relativity explains gravity, black holes, gravitational lensing, time dilation, length contraction, and the future fate of the universe. So it's a very fruitful set of mathematical structures, and there's still new things coming out of it. It's applied for GPS. GPS would not work without the corrections from general relativity. So it's a very fruitful area of science.
So anyone who wants to know more about it should come out to the talk. And that's 7 o'clock this Wednesday at Marie Drake Planetarium.
That's all true.
True facts right here on a Juno afternoon.
Yes.
Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mm-hmm.
Woke up this morning with light in my eyes and then realized it was still dark outside. It was a light coming down from the sky. I don't know who or why. Must be those strangers that come every night. Those saucer-shaped lights put people uptight. Leave blue-green footprints that glow in the dark. I hope they get home all right. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride? Woke up this morning, I was feeling quite weird. Had flies in my beard, my toothpaste was smeared. Over my window, they'd written my name. Said, so long, we'll see you again. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride? Won't you please take me along? I won't do anything wrong. Hey, Mr. Spaceman, won't you please take me along for a ride?
You're tuned into a Juno afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's about 16 minutes to the top of the hour. That was Spaceman by the Byrds, which I thought was a pretty good segue for our next guest who is joining us via phone. And they are representing Coast. And that's Coast with two S's. So thanks and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Shelley.
You're welcome. Now, would you please introduce yourself and tell us how you're connected with Coast?
I will. My name's Julia Parrish, and I am the executive director of Coast. And Coast is an acronym. It stands for Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team. And it is a citizen science program, so where real people, non-geeked-out scientists, actually get to go out and participate in data collection and seeing how the world works.
What kinds of data does Coast collect?
Well, we focus on birds, so that was a really great intro song.
Thank you.
We actually don't look at live birds. We actually look at dead birds, birds that wash up on the beaches, wash in on the tide. And we've been doing that for about 17 years. And we've had folks in the Juneau area since about 2006.
And you're with us today to talk about an upcoming training. Would you like to say a bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So that is coming up on Sunday, the 22nd of October, starting at noon and running until 6 p.m. And it is at the Forest Science Lab on the on the campus. So the address, if anybody is interested, is 11175 Auk Lake Way. Or you can go to the COAST website, which is www.coast.org, and click on trainings and find it there and sign up.
And what's the format of the training like? Is it primarily in the classroom, or will you be going outside at all?
Well, we might go outside, but I actually travel with birds and parts of birds, which actually TSA hasn't stopped me yet on. Kind of amazing. So it's a real interactive training. It's not that kind of boring lecture, endless lecture, that some people think about when they think about going to a training. It's pretty hands-on. So it's all about teaching people how to figure out what kind of bird might be in front of them on the beach. If they come across a wing or maybe a carcass that's a little bit disheveled because it's rolled around in the tide, or maybe a bear or a fox has gotten to it, we can still get you to species, which turns out to be both pretty fun and pretty great for science, because all of that data coming in to the COAST program, we get data every day, gives us a big picture of what's going on in the environment. And there's been a lot going on in the environment.
Yes, that's true. So trainees will learn a bit about identifying birds. Mm-hmm. Will they also learn anything about handling a specimen or population studies? Is that involved at all?
Yeah, we definitely we start out, in fact, telling folks the stories of what's been happening recently, how the marine environment has been changing so much and how that has impacted seabirds and marine birds in the coastal environment. So, you know, if you're going to spend a few hours at a training, you really want to know that it's going to be a wise investment of your time, and that if you sign up for our program, that will be a wise investment of your time. And I'd like to think that people like being in our program. We actually have about 1,000 people that collect data for us in the lower 48 and up in Alaska. And that makes us one of the largest citizen science programs on the West Coast, and definitely the largest beach bird program in the world.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. I didn't know that. Do COAST activities from citizen scientists, does that inform decisions related to land management or conservation, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a fabulous question. Certainly our data has been used by various agencies at the state and federal and also tribal level to figure out everything from is there chronic oiling in this place, and might we need to change regulations, for instance, for how close shipping vessels can anchor up to what the impacts of a changing climate might be, and certainly a lot of information on if there's a big die-off of birds, is it harmful to humans? In fact, that's one of the first things that we work on answering, making sure that there's not a disease or some other sort of toxin that's affecting the birds. And so all of those data really go into the both the information stream, because it's really important for people to know what's going on, but also the decision stream in terms of is this a bird, is this a place that we want to protect or protect more.
Right. Would you happen to have any examples of maybe something recently that's happened that COAST was involved in, anything from recent news or current events?
Well, certainly a few years ago, and I'm sure that some of your listeners may remember this, in 2015-16, there was just a massive, massive die-off of common murres. So those penguin-looking birds, white front, black back, and they're related to puffins and pigeon guillemots and to marbled murrelets, which are prevalent in Southeast. So common murres, there are a few million of those birds that nest in Alaska. And in that year, they actually had trouble breeding in 2015, and then they started to die in droves. They washed into beaches throughout the Gulf of Alaska, down to southeast, out the Alaska Peninsula, out the chain, and in fact, that mortality event hopped over the chain and was even experienced up in the Pribilof Islands in the Bering Sea. So just an incredible, incredible geographic spread of this bird in real trouble. And we, together with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and USGS partners, estimate that there were as many as 1 million birds that were killed in that event. So that's a larger seabird mortality signal than we have ever seen on the West Coast. And we think it's related to a warming ocean. It was pretty warm. You'll remember the blob was hanging out in the Northeast Pacific right off our coastline.
Right.
And that really affected, you know, it affected what kind of phytoplankton and zooplankton, the little insects of the sea were there. It affected the forage fish. It affected the herring, and that affected the birds. And so COAST was there collecting data, figuring out how many birds were dying and of what kind. And that's the basic information that we use in science to create an estimate of mortality. So without people on the beach, we would not have that scientific information.
Wow. Well, it sounds like these participants are really contributing quite a lot. And it also sounds like birds are a bit of a barometer of the ecosystem, maybe more so than I thought. I know everything is kind of connected, but it sounds like you can really learn a lot just by learning about what's happening with bird populations.
Yeah, I think that's really right. Certainly, if we only had 2 or 3 beaches, we might not get the whole story. But consider this. One of the major species that breeds in Alaska, the northern fulmar, it looks a little like a gull, but it's actually related to an albatross. It comes down to the lower 48 in the wintertime where it winters, and then it goes back to Alaska. And we have coast beaches that are along its entire migration route. So if something's happening to it in the breeding areas, we can catch that. If something's happening to it in the wintering areas, then we can catch that. And that's really important because seabirds, they fly really long distances, so their home range, their habitat can be up to half of the North Pacific Ocean. So having that many people in that many places, we have about 500 beaches that are monitored in the COAST program, we can really see the entire annual ambit or migratory pathway of a bird, and we can figure out when it's in trouble.
If you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Dr. Julia Parrish, Executive Director and Founder of COAST, COAST with 2 S's. Julia, will you please tell us what that stands for one more time?
Yes, that stands for the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team. So there are the 2 S's, Seabird and Survey. Got to have a good acronym, right, if you're going to have a citizen science program.
No doubt about that. So the COAST program is having a training coming up this Sunday. It's taking place on the UAS campus. And what room was that again, or what building?
It's the Forest Service Lab, and it starts at noon.
Great. Any parking instructions?
Gosh, you know, that is an excellent question and one I cannot answer.
Okay.
But we'll have that on the COAST website. So, again, that's www.coast.org.
Great. And who should come to this training?
Well, you know, that's a great question. People ask me, gosh, do I have to be a bird expert? I don't really know a lot about birds. I like walking on the beach, but I just feel like I don't know enough. Our youngest coaster is 7 years old.
Wow.
And our oldest coaster is 94. So we appeal to all age ranges. If you like being outdoors, you like being on the beach, you have a beach that you like to walk on, and you notice changes over time, you like to return to that place and look at the seasons, see what's going on, notice what's washing in, you're a perfect person for COAST. It doesn't really matter whether you have bird expertise or not. In fact, I like to tell people that there's only really 2 things you need to be able to tell to be a coaster. If you come upon something on the beach, you need to be able to tell it's a bird and not something else. And you got to know that it's dead. But other than those 2 things, we can train you to do everything else.
Well, thank you, Dr. Parrish. Sounds like it's going to be a super interesting training. Again, that's this Sunday, October 22nd, the UAS campus in the Forest Service Lab. Starts at noon. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that'll do it.
Great. Well, thanks for speaking with us today, and thank you for all that great information.
Thanks so much, Shelley.
This is Bird Note. Listen carefully to the song of the Pacific Wren. What we hear as a blur of sound, the Pacific Wren hears as a precise sequence of sounds. That birds can hear so acutely the fine structure of song allows them to convey much information in a short sound. That's probably why, naturalist Rosemary Jealous writes, even the most extensive bird song seems so brief to us. Let's listen again, but this time with the song slowed down to 1/4 speed. Pacific wrens may hear the song of other Pacific wrens this way, enabling them to imitate each other. The same would be true for winter wrens of the eastern states and Eurasian wrens. Whatever the species, they remind us that creatures we share the world with read and respond to nature in ways we sometimes cannot see or hear. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support for Bird Note comes from Bloomsbury, a publisher of natural history books and birding guides. Critical Critters by Ralph Steadman and Carrie Levy is available now.
The KRNN Spotlight Concert Series presents a night of country music in tribute to longtime DJ Don Drew. Local musicians Andrew and Aaron Heist, Riley Woodford, Annie Bartholomew, Patricia Hull, and more will sing tunes from Don's real country playbook. The show starts at 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 1st at the Gold Town Theater. Tickets at KRNN.org, the station, and at the door.
Real country song.
Thanks for tuning in today to a Juno Afternoon. Our guests were Maria Lovishuk, Alan Akiyama, and Charlene Miller, Dr. Julia Parrish, and Steve Kosis. We featured music by Jack Johnson, Altern and Bonnie Prince Billy, and of course, the birds. One last look at weather. Widespread rain showers, highs in mid-40s, and tonight more rain and lows around 40. Jeff Brown is the producer, and I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. Today's show will be available on demand online at ktoo.org. Until tomorrow, this has been a Juno Afternoon. Have a great Juno evening.